Has your slow Wi-Fi worn out its welcome? Switch to Cable One high-speed internet now with Wi-Fi One. Get up to 100 megs, just $35 a month. Call 855-CABLE-1 and welcome the best Wi-Fi into your home. Wi-Fi One gives you whole home Wi-Fi coverage, guaranteed. Call 855-CABLE-1. Cable One, the face of fast.
$35 a month for the first 3 months. Modem lease required with Wi-Fi One. In-home coverage only. Restrictions apply. Call Cable One for details.
Winning numbers and the Powerball number on their ticket, then we'll be worried about North Korea conducting its sixth nuclear bomb test and whether or not North Korea was in fact able to buy rocket components to build an intercontinental ballistic missile with the potential to strike the United States and its territories in an act of provocation, because the North Koreans are wanting to push the envelope. And they are doing so even in the face of UN sanctions. Now, what we did see earlier this past week was that the Chinese government had gone ahead with approving the United Nations sanctions, which I think is something that North Korea was never looking for, and that North Korea has basically now lost its major buyer for one of its biggest exports, which is North Korean coal. North Korean coal being sold to the Chinese, much to the amount of about this current estimated Powerball jackpot, to about the tune of between $400 and $500 million a year, which feeds a lot of North Korea's economy. North Korea is, of course, not going to be able to sell that coal anymore until the UN sanctions are changed, lifted, or however we want to have to say it. But, you know, Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, is probably wishing that he could go to Florida right now and buy a Powerball ticket, because, you know, then he'd have the money back for his economy. So really, what is the end game there? What is North Korea playing for? What is the ultimate ruse? Are they going to start a war with South Korea? South Korea's president already coming out in the past week talking about how the United States would regret any kind of preemptive military strike against North Korea. Basically, for all appearances, taking the side of the North Korean people in that they don't want to see relatives who they've been disconnected from by a border for the last 60 years, annihilated in a limited nuclear exchange. And you can sort of see their viewpoint, but to be honestly surprised about it, to actually see a new president in South Korea saying, don't attack North Korea. Not very surprised about that myself. I think the rest of the world sort of looks at it and wonders, what's really going on there, and it goes back to the very idea of don't watch the left hand over here, watch the right hand, watch the pretty lady, the magician's assistant on the stage, and you won't see what the administration is really up to. The Trump administration, in my opinion, has been quite masterful in juggling staff members around. It's just crazy. It is a reality show in the White House on TV for, I think, the entertainment of the President of the United States. I don't know that it is necessarily all that entertaining for the American people. I think that it becomes more confusing day after day, trying to keep track of who has had what position in the Trump White House, who's been accused of potential leaks, who's out, who's in, why are they in, why are they out? Is it connected to this Russian investigation, which so far hasn't brought anything tangible to the table other than a lot of a rumor mongering on that end, and it's like having a soap opera. But to what end? I mean, what is it? What is it really? What is it really bringing about? And only the president and his inner circle know exactly what's coming. Now, we did have the incident with the white supremacist protests and counter-protests in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm sure that you've heard a lot about that, and what we have now is the aftermath. And we have statements coming out from senators saying that it feels like violence is coming. A GOP, a Republican senator, last night warned that it feels like violence is coming, and the president won't be able to calm the nation in the face of it. In an extensive Facebook post, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska shared his thoughts. He said, "We're prompted by the violence last weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, that left three people dead and multiple injured." Mr. Sasse unloaded on President Trump and his administration over the response to the incident, which Sasse called out as motivated by white supremacists. Sasse charged that some of Trump's closest advisors see racial division as an opportunity. However, he also blamed misunderstandings, some deliberate, on both sides of the aisle, and argued that the current national debate should not be a fight about historical monuments. Many state and local governments are taking steps to remove Confederate statues in the wake of the Charlottesville violence, which was originally organized to oppose the removal of a General Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville, Virginia. Trump has criticized the removal of Confederate monuments, citing their historical value. Senator Sasse also said he doesn't believe Trump can bring the country together after the violence, both what was caused last weekend and what may come in the future. Sasse wrote, "I doubt that Donald Trump will be able to calm and comfort the nation in that moment. He and lots of others will probably tell an awful combination of partial truths and outright falsehoods." I mean, so what is, you know, what is really being said here? We have a United States senator from Nebraska talking about potential racial violence in the United States after the events with the protests and counter-protests in Charlottesville, Virginia. Is it really all that uncomfortable for you out there right now? I mean, do you really feel threatened by your neighbors because they are different skin tone? I mean, do you think that some form of a race war is actually being fomented? Is it being talked about seriously? Is this just one random Republican senator wanting to stir up interest in the fact that he is a U.S. senator amongst people who would be looking for news information and headlines related to any type of an internet search which contain the word violence? I mean, when you start pegging yourself to something like violence as a search term, really? In Nebraska, I personally don't see how race violence is going to, and don't take this the wrong way, depending on who you are, it doesn't matter to me who, you know, what racial category you put yourself in. If you live in Nebraska, do you think racial violence is coming? I mean, seriously? I could understand a white supremacist rally attracting anti-fascism, anti-protest protesters. I could understand people who are against the idea of fascism in the United States organizing a counter-protest to people who are protesting to keep a Confederate statue up in a town, and I can see what was motivating people, as the president liked to say, on all sides, but people don't like for all sides to end up taking blame. But if you have a group of white supremacists who are wanting to keep a Confederate statue in place, and you have a group of anti-fascist, left-wing leaning liberal protesters showing up, if everybody's showing up, including the police, who are there to try to maintain public order, if everybody that shows up brings a club, how can you not expect violence? You know, speaking just off the top of my head on what happens in places like Charlottesville. I mean, yes, it's tragic. Yes, a girl lost her life. Yes, the girl's mother said she would not speak to President Trump. For those of you who are listening to me that don't know, the girl that lost her life in the incident where the driver was charged in charging a crowd of people with a vehicle, the girl that was involved that lost her life was not African American. So it's not a Caucasian or a white person committing an act of vehicle homicide against a black person. This was a white-on-white fatality. Other people were injured, yes, but the fatality itself actually comes out, and the girl in question there happened to be Caucasian. Would you see even worse if it had been a black girl that was ran over? I don't know. I can't honestly answer that question because that hadn't happened. You know, I can only look at what we see there. And the thing about the girl's mother saying she would not meet with President Trump, she does apparently support President Trump, or she doesn't want to lead any credence to anything that President Trump has to say. Trump appeared to waffle on what he did have to say about Charlottesville. Of course, saying at the time that all sides, you know, were to blame, and had to come out and was basically having his hand forced by the media into making a stronger statement against the white supremacist movement in the country. I don't know that it was entirely necessary for the press to push as hard as they did for the President of the United States to have to come out to make a statement directly against the white supremacist movement in the country and to say, you know, basically white supremacist, like the words white supremacist have to come out of the mouth of the President of the United States in order for anybody to be particularly satisfied with what the president was trying to convey. I think the president is very generalized when he does make statements, and I think that a lot of statements that the president makes come off the top of his head, sort of like what you listen to when we have episodes like this on Voice of the People Radio. We're just kind of looking at this. And, you know, Newsweek magazine, which is not on the newsstands, by the way, Newsweek putting out a cover. Newsweek, of course, used to be available on your newsstand on a weekly basis, along with Time magazine, with Life magazine. Several years ago, Newsweek decided to take themselves off of the newsstands because they were suffering poor sales. So Newsweek has a cover for their new issue of the magazine, and it depicts President Trump in a Lazy Boy recliner. Yeah, I guess the only thing about that is that, you know, it's published online. Okay, so the only way for you to see the Newsweek magazine cover is to go to the digital edition of Newsweek magazine. I mean, so really, putting out something that controversial means that the only thing Newsweek is looking at is, of course, trying to pump up its views, pump up its internet circulation, pump up the number of people that want to see this controversial cover. But the only way for you to see it is to go to Newsweek.com, and then you'll, of course, be able to pick up on the comments that people are making on Twitter. You know, it's just crazy. Steve Bannon reportedly wants to start a network to the right of Fox News. Okay, you know, of course, the Trump administration as a whole has been rocked by a series of high-profile exits, including Sean Spicer as the press secretary and James Comey as the FBI director since the president took office in January. Those are probably two of the more high-profile exits. And here are the top-level people who have either been fired or resigned from the administration. You know, I mean, former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon has told Friends he wants to create a network that leans further right than Fox News. Axios reported that on Saturday. It's unclear whether it'll be a television network like Fox News or one that exclusively streams online. The White House confirmed Bannon's departure from President Trump's administration on Friday. Okay, Breitbart's White House correspondent Charlie Spierling tweeted on Friday that Steve Bannon returned to Breitbart News as the executive chairman and chaired the outlet's evening editorial meeting. So Steve was back hard at work at Breitbart.com. News of Bannon weighing establishing a network that leans more conservative than Fox News comes 2 months after it was reported that Roger Ailes, Fox News' deceased ex-CEO, actually wanted the same thing. Axios reported that in the days before his death, Roger Ailes reached out to Steve Bannon, who was still in the White House at that time, about teaming up to form a new conservative media machine in the mold of Fox News. Steve Bannon reportedly had no desire to leave the Trump administration. Now that he's out of the White House, Bannon told Bloomberg that he was going to war for Trump against his opponents on Capitol Hill, in the media, and in corporate America. The Trump presidency that we fought for and won is over. Steve Bannon then said, I feel jacked up. Now I'm free. Okay, so Steve's future at the White House appeared to be in jeopardy long before he left, but the final straw, however, appeared to be when Steve Bannon gave an on-the-record interview to the American Prospect, a left-leaning publication. In that interview, Steve Bannon lashed out at National Economic Council Director Gary Cohn, contradicted the president on North Korea, and called white nationalists a collection of clowns and losers. He also said he hopes Democrats talk about racism every day. The longer they talk about identity politics, I got 'em. I want them to talk about racism every day. If the left is focused on race and identity and we go with economic nationalism, we can crush the Democrats. The interview reportedly further incensed President Trump, who was already irritated at Steve Bannon, for participating in Josh Green's book, The Devil's Bargain, which casts Steve Bannon as being significantly responsible for Trump's victory in the November election. Asked during his Tuesday press conference about Bannon's status in the administration, Trump simply had said, "We'll see." Look, I like Mr. Bannon. He's a friend of mine, but Mr. Bannon came on very late. You know that. I went through 17 senators, governors, and I won all the primaries. Mr. Bannon came on very much later than that. And I like him. He's a good man. He's not a racist. I can tell you that. He's a good person. He actually gets a very unfair press in that regard. But we'll see what happens with Mr. Bannon. But he's a good person. And I think the press treats him, well, frankly, very unfairly. 3 days after that press conference, Steve Bannon was out at the White House. So, I mean, there you go. Another cog there in the rumor mill machine that Bannon reportedly wants to start a network to the right of Fox News. Excuse me, that might have been a Freudian slip there, folks. Trump has also commented saying Bannon will be tough and smart back at Breitbart News. President Trump cheered on former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon's return to Breitbart News on Saturday, saying in a tweet that Bannon may do even better than before back at the website. Steve Bannon will be a tough and smart new voice at Breitbart News, maybe even better than before. Fake news needs the competition. And coming from President Trump at about 12:47 p.m. today on Twitter. Steve Bannon returned to Breitbart News on Friday, just hours after parting ways with the White House. Steve Bannon has reclaimed the title of executive chairman for Breitbart and directed the outlet's Friday editorial meeting. The website made a statement on Friday. The populist nationalist movement got a lot stronger today, Breitbart News editor-in-chief Alex Marlowe said on Friday. Breitbart gained an executive chairman with his finger on the pulse of the Trump agenda. Trump's tweet adds to speculation over what the relationship between Trump and Bannon will look like following his leaving the White House. On Friday, Bannon told the Weekly Standard that Trump's presidency is dead, while another Breitbart editor tweeted, hashtag war, signaling possible hostility against the Trump White House. I mean, very, very strange developments here. It's just crazy. And we talk about the senator in Nebraska talking about violence. And we again have police and violence in the news. In Kissimmee, Florida, a police officer in Florida died from his injuries today, a day after his colleague was killed when a suspect fired at them during a scuffle while they were on patrol. The suspect was later arrested at a bar. Sergeant Sam Howard died Saturday afternoon at a hospital where he had been taken following Friday night's attack in Kissimmee, Florida, located south of the theme park hub of Orlando. Officer Matthew Baxter died Friday night, a short time after authorities say he was shot by 45-year-old Everett Miller. Miller faces a charge of first-degree murder for the killing of Baxter. Authorities hadn't yet said what charges he could face for Howard's death. During a patrol late Friday of a neighborhood with a history of drug activity, Baxter was checking out three people, including Miller, when the officer got into a scuffle with Miller. Howard, his sergeant, responded as backup, said Kissimmee Police Chief Jeff O'Dell. The officers didn't have an opportunity to return fire. They weren't wearing body cameras. Sheriff's deputies with the neighboring law enforcement agency later tracked Miller down to a bar and approached him. Miller started reaching toward his waistband when the deputies tackled and subdued him, Chief O'Dell said. They found a handgun and a revolver on him. They were extremely brave and heroic actions taken by the sheriff's deputies. The police chief said Miller was taken to jail wearing Officer Baxter's handcuffs. Authorities originally said they believed there were four suspects, but the chief said Saturday that no other arrests are anticipated. Miller, age 45, was a Marine veteran and was recently involuntarily committed for a mental evaluation by the Osceola County Sheriff's Office. The early stages of the investigation shows that Miller had made threats to law enforcement on Facebook, Chief O'Dell said. Officer Baxter, 27, had been with the Kissimmee Police Department for 3 years. He was married to another Kissimmee police officer, and they have four children. Officer Howard, age 36, has served with the Kissimmee Police Department for 10 years. He and his wife have one child. They are two wonderful men, family men, Chief O'Dell said. They are too committed to doing it the right way. Separately, two other officers were injured late Friday in Jacksonville, Florida, after police responded to reports of an attempted suicide at a home where the mother of the man's child, their 19-month-old toddler, the woman's mother, and a family friend were thought to be in danger. One of the officers was shot in both hands, and the other was shot in the stomach. Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams said Saturday that officers Michael Fox and Kevin Jarrell are in stable condition following Friday night's confrontation with an armed Derek Brabham, who was killed by the officers. In Pennsylvania, two state troopers were shot and a suspect killed outside a small-town store south of Pittsburgh on Friday night. President Trump tweeted early on Saturday that his thoughts and prayers were with the Kissimmee Police Department. Governor of Florida Rick Scott has tweeted that he was heartbroken by the attacks on the officers. So, you know, we have senators in Nebraska worrying about ongoing racial violence, and we have officers being shot across the country. It seems like that is, never-ending thing. How is all of this being taken outside of the United States? You know, it's kind of hard to put your finger on it, but anti-fascist activists gathered in the Berlin suburb of Spandau on Saturday to protest against a vigil by about 250 neo-Nazis commemorating the 30th anniversary of the death of Nazi convict Rudolf Hess. The neo-Nazis planned a march from the suburb station to the former Spandau prison, where Hess, an early ally of Germany's wartime dictator Adolf Hitler, served out the life sentence he was handed down at the post-war Nuremberg crimes trials. Far-right activists held up banners reading, "I regret nothing," and hoisted the red, white, and black flag of Hitler's Third Reich as about 1,000 police officers looked on. Neo-Nazis commemorate the 1987 prison suicide of Hitler's one-time deputy every year. But this gathering has drawn more attention after a far-right march in Charlottesville, Virginia this month that led to the death of a young woman and drew international criticism. Many anti-fascist protesters said the vigil in Germany should have been barred. It's appalling that in the year 2017, Nazis can openly go on the streets for this deputy of Hitler, said Gerhard Sattler, a protester. This is impossible. The whole of German society must stand up against this. The crimes of the wartime regime are a matter of great sensitivity in Germany, where symbols of the Nazi regime, such as the swastika flag, are banned, and where education about the dangers of totalitarianism and racial politics are a staple of the school curriculum. But Berlin's Senator for Interior Affairs said banning this gathering would have been impossible to reconcile with the political freedoms of a democracy. I would have been delighted with a ban, said Interior Affairs Senator Andreas Geisel, but we looked very closely at the matter and concluded that unfortunately, a-holes also get to benefit from democratic freedoms. Rudolf Hess, who was the last war criminal in Spandau Prison, where he died, age 93, was appointed Hitler's deputy when the Nazis came to power in 1933, a position he retained until 1941, when he flew solo to Britain, believing Hitler wanted him to negotiate a peace between the two warring sides. He spent the rest of the war in prison in Britain before being convicted of crimes against the peace at the Nuremberg Military Tribunal. So there you go. Even the events from Charlottesville, Virginia, after a far-right march earlier this month that led to the death of a young woman, have made the news regarding neo-Nazis in Germany. You know, surprising? Probably not. I mean, it's just the way things go when things make news in that vein. It tends to be cited as a reference point for all of this. And so we can see that the German Democratic Republic there is actually allowing people to make their vigil and make their presence known. And so perhaps that speaks towards tolerance of even the most idiotic of political statements in the United States under the rule of free speech, as we want to advocate that even if I disagree with you, I will defend your right at the top of my lungs for you to be able to say what it is that you want to say, because in the United States of America, you have the right to speak your mind no matter what the rest of the public thinks. You know, make their
about
vigil.
What you have
make
to
their,
say.
Make their presence known. No.
Five and things so not to do during the solar eclipse. You know, the great American eclipse is inspiring a large frenzy in the United States, don't make these mistakes on Monday. The great American eclipse is inspiring millions of people who are preparing to get the best look possible as the moon covers the sun on Monday. All of North America will be treated to at least a partial eclipse with a full eclipse visible in 14 states. Are you ready for the spectacular sight? The biggest thing to remember is to never look directly at the sun without the proper protection. Here are the main don'ts that you should know about. Number one, do not use do-it-yourself solar filters. Okay? Eclipse viewing glasses with solar filters and ISO 12312-2 certification are the only safe way to look directly at the sun. Do-it-yourself solar filters are not recommended. People have done a lot of strange things. They take a glass with tea in it or coffee or something to put in front of it. Not safe, said Sean Britton, an associate professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Clemson University. Looking through a dark beer bottle or spray-painted glass also won't protect you. By the way, astronomers who teach kids about eclipse safety have heard it all. One of the little girls at the schools asked if her dog needs eclipse glasses, said Andrew Garman, a graduate student at Clemson University's Department of Physics and Astronomy. For the record, no. Animals know better than to look at the sun and may actually use the darkening sky as a sign to take a nap. Number two on the list, don't put on eclipse glasses and then look through binoculars. That's not safe. The concentrated solar rays will damage the filter and enter your eyes, causing serious injury, NASA says. Solar filters must be attached to the front of any binoculars, telescope, or camera lens. Never use small solar filters that attach to the eyepiece, as is the case in some older, cheaper telescopes. If the filter is attached to the spot where you place your eye, sunlight concentrated by your optics will burn right through it. The American Astronomical Society has cautioned you. Okay. And, last last three things here. Don't wear your eclipse glasses during the brief moment of totality. If and only if you are on the thin path of totality where day will turn into night for about 2 minutes, it's okay to take off your eclipse viewing glasses during the brief time when the moon fully eclipses the sun. You're safe then, and you can soak in this spectacular sight. The instant the totality is over, immediately look away and put the special glasses back on. Number four, don't focus your energy on taking photos. Experience the universe putting on a show with your own eyes. And number five, don't pay attention only to the sky during the eclipse. If you're in the path of totality, the celestial show will alter your surroundings in amazing and eerie ways, said psychologist Kate Russo, who travels the world seeking out total solar eclipses to show how they affect people. So first-timers have no idea that the world can exist in this particular way, so stay in the moment and take in everything around you. You'll remember that for the rest of your life. You know, so, you know, that being said, we're going to take a break here, folks. We might come back with some more total eclipse don'ts, but those were the top five. You've been listening to the first hour of Voice of the People Radio here on the United Public Radio Network. We'll be back after these words from the station, so stay tuned as the second hour of Voice of the People Radio is coming up, followed by Michael Angley. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
The harmful foods I'm going to show you right now are labeled and marketed as health foods. When I reveal them to you, you'll be shocked. I'm also going to reveal to you my number one carb you should never eat, ever. This man-made carbohydrate is banned in Canada, China, and the European Union, yet somehow it's still legal in the US, where it's heavily marketed to children. The FDA is finally considering banning some of the items I'm going to share with you today. However, I created this presentation so you can know which foods you need to avoid now.
Moving, put your drinks up. Woo! Your body up and drop it on the floor. Let the rhythm change your world on the floor. You know we're running tonight on the floor. We're All I need is some vodka, some chunky conk, and watch the chico get Donkey Kong. Baby, if you ready for things to get heavy, I get on the floor and act a fool if you let me. Lie. Don't believe me, just bet me. My name ain't Keith, but I see the way you sweat me. L.A., Miami, New York, say no more, get on the floor.
Welcome to the TZD Game Show, the show where we ask you about highway safety.
Credit cards, if you know what I mean. Here in Cuba, la cosa está dura, but the women get down, if you know what I mean. Here in Colombia, the women got everything done, but they're some of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. In Brazil, they freaky with big old booties and they thongs, blue, yellow, and green. In L.A., tengo la mexicana. In New York, tengo la boricua. He sido para todas las mujeres en Venezuela. Y en Miami, tengo cualquiera.
Created KFC's original recipe fried chicken with its blend of 11 herbs and spices. So when it comes to fried chicken, nobody beats the original Colonel. Not even Norm MacDonald, who just wears makeup to look like the Colonel. Oh, come on, Norm. We're only joking. You look great. You're great. The original Colonel's original recipe. It's still finger-licking good.
Picture that with a Kodak. Or better yet, go to Times Square, take a picture of me with a Kodak. Flip my life from negative to positive, I just want y'all to know that. And tonight, let's enjoy life. Pitbull, Naya, Neo, that's right.
know what time it is.
We gon' set it off tonight. Just so. Set the club on fire.
Just so.
Enrique, holla at him like.
Girl, please excuse me if I'm coming to you strong. But tonight is the night we can really let go. My girlfriend's out of town and I'm all alone. Your boyfriend's on vacation and he doesn't have to know. No, oh, 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 oh. No, what can do the things I'm gonna wanna do to you? No, oh, oh, oh. I shout it out, scream it loud, let me hear you go.
Baby, I like it.
Hey everybody, you're listening live to Voice of the People Radio on United Public Radio Network, coming to you from the 105 FM bandwidth and 107 FM in beautiful New Orleans, Louisiana. This is your host, Greg Miller, coming back at you just with another, you know, another hour of stuff before you have the dulcet tones of Angry Angley. The Angry Angley will be coming up after Voice of the People Radio. We don't really know exactly how angry he's going to be, and we'd like to welcome everyone who's listening to us on VOSCast. If you're not familiar with VOSCast, it's spelled V-O-S-C-A-S-T. So welcome everybody who is listening to United Public Radio Network Live. If you'd like to try to call into the station, you can do so at your own risk. Be live on the air, 504-273-7379. Again, the call-in number for the station is 504-273-7379. You'd be live with your host here on Voice of the People Radio. Now, what we are looking at in news of medical interest for those of you out there who have children or you are an adult suffering from peanut allergies, the BBC reports that one available oral treatment for peanut allergies seems to be effective for 4 years, which is an unprecedented advancement. In an Australian study, children were administered a probiotic containing peanut protein daily for a course of 18 months. When tested a month later, a whopping 80% of these kids could handle peanuts without any symptoms. And when they were tested 4 years after the first administration of the probiotic, a full 70% were still able to consume peanuts without any ill effects. As many parents are aware, peanut allergy is one of the most life-threatening food allergies on the planet. According to the researchers of this study, more than 250 million people worldwide are affected by various food allergies, and that number has alarmingly tripled over the past 20 years. The lead researcher of the study, Professor Mimi Tang of Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Melbourne, Australia, said the importance of this finding is that these children were able to eat peanuts like children who don't have peanut allergy and still maintain their tolerance, safe, protected against reactions to peanuts. So according to Ms. Tang, this is the first time a peanut allergy treatment has appeared to be effective for such a long period of time. The research findings were published in The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health. Again, that's The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health. Tang said the study suggests the exciting possibility that tolerance is a realistic target for treating food allergy. This is a major step forward in identifying an effective treatment to address the food allergy problem in Western societies. If you want to get your science on and impress the other parents in your carpool, if that's your thing, the probiotic's name is Lactobacillus rhamnosus. That's spelled L-A-C-T-O-B-A-C-I-L-L-U-S. And the second word is rhamnosus. R-H-A-M-N-O-S-U-S. Okay, we'll get that out there. And it's been used to treat other allergies as well. There is no cure or permanent fix yet, and let's be clear, 70 to 80% definitely isn't the 100% many parents would like to see. Still, 4 years of scientifically proven protection is a major boon for those who live in fear of life-threatening reactions to the peanut, the omnipresent legume. Yes, the peanut is actually not a nut. It is a legume, folks. So there you go. If you have any child or adult in your family who has an allergy to peanuts, this is a study that you will want to look into from The Lancet, L-A-N-C-E-T, Child and Adolescent Health. So go ahead and check that out. So good news for once in the field of allergy research there. You know, we've seen some very tragic cases where the young lady died from eating some peanut product, who was not administered her injection in time and was at a family picnic, and her parents actually happened to be doctors. You know, it's a very, very touchy subject, and it's not always one that ends well. There are many different products which are used in households by parents of children that do not have peanut allergies, and sometimes if their young friends do not tell you, or their parents do not tell you that there are peanut allergies involved, it can lead to some very drastic and sometimes very unfortunate fatal side effects there with peanut-based products and candies when you have children who are attending things like parties. So always take the time to ask about your child's little friends when you are throwing a birthday party or whatnot to make sure that they don't have peanut allergies, because you don't want to be that parent who is responsible for producing the peanut-tainted goods. Not that anyone would ever do that on purpose. You know, it's one of those crazy things. Research also says that walnuts may help reduce cravings. Walnuts are known for being a satisfying and heart-healthy snack, but a new study indicates they could help dieters deal with cravings. Now, high in antioxidants and good fats, nuts are a pantry staple for every health-conscious person. You know, dieters typically rely on the heart-healthy food for a high-protein snack that satisfies, but a new study indicates that nuts' nutritional profile isn't the only thing that makes them a good food for weight loss. Researchers at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center have found that walnuts activate an area in the brain linked to controlling hunger and cravings. Published in the journal Diabetes, Obesity, and Metabolism, this is the first time research has shown that nuts may actually change the way your brain works and possibly prevent cravings. We don't often think about how what we eat impacts the activity in our brain, said study co-author Olivia M. Farr, Ph.D., instructor at medicine at the BIDMC, in a statement. We know people report feeling fuller after eating walnuts, but it was pretty surprising to see evidence of activity changing in the brain related to food cues, and by extension, what people were eating and how hungry they feel. For the study, 10 people classified as obese visited the center's research center on two different five-day sessions. During one session, everybody drank daily smoothies made with 48 grams of walnuts, the recommended serving by the American Diabetes Association. In a separate visit, participants received a smoothie without walnuts, although it was nutritionally similar and had the same flavor as the nut smoothie. The study was randomized, so volunteers and researchers were unaware which smoothie contained nuts. On the last day of the sessions, everyone went through a functional
magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI test. This allowed researchers to detect changes in the brain by looking at oxygen levels. When an area is more active, more oxygen is present to help with the increased blood flow. The team showed participants images of food porn, like hamburgers and desserts, neutral photos of flowers, and then food items that don't necessarily cause cravings, such as vegetables. Unsurprisingly, people reacted to the unhealthy food images. But the reaction isn't what you think. An area in the brain that's associated with control known as the right insula became more active when people who drank the walnut smoothies viewed images of unhealthy but delicious food. This is a powerful measure, said Christos Manstros, and director of the Human Nutrition Unit at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, as well as professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. We know there's no ambiguity in terms of study results. When participants eat walnuts, this part of their brain lights up. And we know that's connected with what they're telling us about feeling less hungry or more full. Researchers now plan on testing quantities as well as other varieties of nuts to see if a similar effect is produced. Aside from their ability to control cravings, maybe, eating walnuts comes with many other health benefits. They've been shown to help fight inflammation, reduce bad cholesterol, prevent plaque buildup in arteries, and support healthy bones and immunity. So there you go, folks. A study on the way. And go ahead and check that out in the journal Diabetes, Obesity, and Metabolism. And you may have an answer to stopping that craving for that delicious bacon double cheeseburger by popping a handful of walnuts. You know, who knew? I mean, really, it's just one of those things. It's so far letting people know you are what you eat. Does that mean that you're nuts? A toddler choked on a grape, and now his family is begging others to learn for first aid. The two-year-old was in a shopping cart and ate them while his mom's back was turned. Detroit mother Emma Carver was looking at some cheese in the grocery store when she heard her two-year-old son making choking noises from the shopping cart. Ayan Umar had snuck two grapes while Carver wasn't looking, and now he was struggling to breathe. I even threw the cheese down and I started banging on him, Carver told local news station WXYZ. But it wasn't getting it out, so it had to be lodged. Nearby shoppers jumped in to help, calling 911 and trying CPR. But by the time emergency medical services arrived, about 6 minutes later, the toddler was gone. I was feeling like maybe it was a bad dream, his father, Muhammad Umar, told WXYZ afterwards. I see him everywhere. The family's devastating heartache could have happened to anyone. Grapes, nuts, candy, hot dogs, and popcorn all pose a major risk to kids younger than 4 years old, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Even if parents know how to keep them away from young children, sometimes older siblings do not, or in this particular case, a toddler tries them when the parent is momentarily distracted. Despite the unthinkable tragedy happening just a week ago, Ayan's parents are taking time to encourage other parents to learn from this moment. Carver informed WXYZ that they've signed up to take a first aid class and advise other people to do the same. The American Red Cross offers both in-person and online training for adult and pediatric first aid and CPR. For choking, the organization offers different advice based on the age of the child. For infants under the age of one, hold the baby face down on your forearm, using your thigh for support. Then gently but firmly thump the infant 5 times on the center of the back using the heel of your hand. That should dislodge the object. Switch and hold the infant face up using 2 fingers to give 5 chest compressions at the center of the infant's breastbone. Repeat those 2 steps. If breathing doesn't resume, begin CPR if the child becomes irresponsive. For children and adults older than one, you can use a similar 5 and 5 approach, alternating between 5 back blows and 5 abdominal thrusts. To give the thrusts, also known as performing the Heimlich maneuver, you should stand behind the person Wrap your arms around their waist and tip them slightly forward. Then place one fist just above the belly button and grab your fist with the other hand. Press hard into the stomach quickly, like you're trying to lift them up. You know, giving a preliminary care, ideally while someone else is calling 911 right away, is important, since choking cuts off oxygen to the brain. And while you hope you'll never need to use it, receiving professional first aid training can help prepare you for the unexpected. So just, you know, a bit of advice, and of course a bit of sadness, the tragedy of the loss of this 2-year-old child, from having just a moment of being turned away looking while the child ends up eating a couple of grapes and choking on them. So pay close attention when you have the little ones out and about, because they do tend to just pick up almost anything, put it in their mouth, especially when it's within reach. Try not to put things like grapes or other small items, no matter what they are, within reach of toddler children when they're riding in the seat in the grocery basket, because they will have the tendency to try to put just about anything in their mouth. So it's very, very sad story there. But if you haven't taken the time, go to the American Red Cross online. Also, you can look up instructions on how to learn CPR. Of course, is never the same as in-person training. So take the time, go down to a CPR training course and learn how to do it in person. Even if you end up using the CPR test dummies, having that practice is a lot better than just watching a video or having an instruction or having me tell you on Voice of the People Radio. It's very, very frightening and surprising when something like that happens, folks. It's just to be able to manage for the unexpected. Try to do your best to be prepared. And speaking about people trying to be prepared during the unexpected, doctors are gearing up for emergency room visits during the solar eclipse. We were talking about the five things to not do during the totality of the solar eclipse in the last hour. The solar eclipse will be upon us in a matter of days, and we're all gearing up for viewing parties, the inevitable Instagrams, and emergency room visits. As it turns out, while we're all scrambling to get special eclipse viewing glasses, doctors are bracing themselves for an expected spike in emergency room visits. In fact, they are so wary that the American College of Emergency Physicians has sent out a statement. I suspect there will be an increase in patient traffic to emergency rooms, especially in the areas expecting a large influx of eclipse watchers, said Dr. Becky Parker, FACEP president of the American Society, said in the statement. The ACEP even consulted emergency physicians across the United States to get a sense of what they expect to see on Monday. Unsurprisingly, hospitals in areas that are in the path of totality, where the moon will completely eclipse the sun, are anticipating an increase in emergency room visits due to eclipse watchers who may not have protected their eyes well enough. However, Dr. Parker said that even the mere fact that the eclipse may shake up our daily lives could be enough to cause a stir. When a population surges, even temporarily, emergency room visits tend to rise. Anything out of the ordinary that shakes up a regular routine like this eclipse or daylight savings time changes can lead to more vehicle accidents. Be mindful of that. So while the eclipse is a once-in-a-life event, you should still make sure to view it safely. Like many experts have said, emergency physicians remind the public that it's extremely important to protect your eyes during the eclipse. If you choose to look at it, you must use proper eye protection from a reputable manufacturer. Staring at the sun, even for a second, can cause severe permanent loss of vision. Remember, regular sunglasses do not offer enough protection. I mean, so how many different ways we might be able to say that? But you know, if you don't have official set of eclipse viewing sunglasses that are manufactured to that ISO standard, then you really should not be trying to look at the solar eclipse and just observe observe the conditions around you and attempt to enjoy that. You know, when it comes to things that have been somewhat controversial in the last few months, one of them was the accident with the destroyer USS Fitzgerald and a merchant vessel, the ACX Crystal, off Japan. Now, while investigations continue into that June 17th collision of that destroyer and the merchant vessel, the Navy, the United States Navy, on Thursday released harrowing details of crew members' efforts to escape a rapidly flooding berthing compartment in waters that were first up to their waist, then up to their necks, and then quickly submerged the entire compartment. So that news coming out a couple of hours ago. Of course, the headline coming to us from the Honolulu Star Advertiser. So keep your eyes open for that. That's going to be hitting your headlines there later on as you catch your local news at 11, or as you stay tuned for further updates from the show host here on United Public Radio Network. I'd like to take a moment here just to remind you that you are listening to Voice of the People Radio on UPRN, the United Public Radio Network, from 105.7 FM in beautiful New Orleans, Louisiana, and past Christiane, Mississippi, and 107.7 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana. Wow. Okay. You know, speaking of strange things, because we have to go back, some of these are just odd. To give you a glimpse into the headlines, there is at least one couple who is planning their wedding ceremony during the solar eclipse, and so that is just another list of things for people to do. We hope that everybody at the wedding party has procured proper solar eclipse viewing glass. If they're going to actually view the eclipse, we don't want them visiting the emergency room, that would just not be good. What else are we going to say? But some of the controversy around that. Okay, I'm very sorry about that, folks. Kind of just caught at a loss. I don't want to see a wedding party of people suddenly blinded by the solar eclipse, going out to the emergency room with the temporary or permanent blindness. You know, with the marches and everything and the tragic consequences in Charlottesville, Virginia last week, you have things going on in the country where you see these movements, and you also have thousands of people marching in Boston, Massachusetts, for a counter-protest to the free speech rally. Tens of thousands of counter-protesters flooded the streets of Boston today, eclipsing, and there's that word again, a competing right-wing free speech rally in a display of solidarity after the deadly white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia last weekend. There was virtually no violence as the two groups confronted each other on the streets of Boston. Counter-protesters gathered near Boston's Malcolm X Boulevard, chanting, "Whose streets? Our streets." And, "No Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA." They also held signs that read, "Resist," "Black Lives Matter," and "Get the hell off my lawn, you bigots." The massive group of diverse demonstrators dwarfed the Boston Free Speech Rally in Boston Common, a downtown city park, where approximately 100 people attended. It is estimated that 40,000 people were out for the demonstrations. The dueling protests on a hot and humid day quickly evaporated after the Free Speech Rally, which was scheduled to begin around 10 a.m. and ended at 1:30 p.m., according to the Boston Police Department. Counter-protest attendees told NBC News they viewed the free speech rally taking place at the same time as code for hate speech. "I think as a country you have a right to free speech," said Boston resident Beth Chandler, But there's a difference to me with hateful speech and free speech. And a lot of what the separatists are saying is hateful speech, and there's not a place for that in our country. I think there are many groups that are marginalized in our community, and I think we need to stand together and say that's not okay. The free speech rally was organized by a coalition of self-described libertarian and conservative groups, some of whom identify with the so-called alt-right, a political grouping mixing racism, white nationalism, anti-Semitism, and populism. Skirmishes between the competing groups, however, did break out before the free speech rally attendees left. Some with the counter-protesters were seen antagonizing a man draped in the American flag, and a free speech attendee tried to rile up the counter-protesters. After the rally, a counter-protester set fire to a large Confederate flag, prompting a few hundred people nearby to break out into cheers. The Boston Police Department tweeted that rocks were being thrown at officers about a mile from the Boston Common. The protests, however, resulted in a handful of arrests, but remained largely peaceful. Boston Police Commissioner William Evans said at an afternoon press conference that the police arrested 27 people, mostly for disorderly conduct and hurling objects at police officers. There were no reported injuries, he said. 99.9% of the people here were here for the right reason, and that was to fight bigotry and hate, Commissioner Evans said, calling it a great day for the city of Boston. No one got hurt and no one was killed, and we have no significant property damage to the city. President Donald Trump, however, prematurely labeled protesters as anti-police agitators in a tweet and thanked the police for looking tough and smart. He also said that Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, a Democrat, was doing a great job. He later called for unity and for the nation to heal, and that was spelled H-E-E-L. I have a feeling President Trump may be using autocorrect on Twitter and doing his tweets using voice to text. Our great country has been divided for decades, but we'll come together again. Sometimes protest is needed in order to heal, and heal we will, the president said before deleting the tweet and correcting the spelling in a later tweet. Walsh, however, thanked the people who protested against white supremacists. I want to thank all the people who came out today to share that message of love, not hate, to fight back against racism, to fight back on anti-Semitism, to fight back on the white supremacists, the Nazis, who were coming to our city. The president, in yet another tweet, appeared to walk back his earlier tweet, also applauded protesters for speaking out against bigotry and hate. So in another tweet, President Donald Trump said, I want to applaud the many protesters in Boston who are speaking out against bigotry and hate. Our country will soon come together as one. Dozens of police called the Public Order Platoon were also wearing protective gear as a precautionary measure, Commissioner Evans said. We had people who came here to cause problems. Sometimes it doesn't look pretty, but that's what they're trained for. Commissioner Evans also said local law enforcement had a plan in place to quell any potential unrest. There were barricades that kept the dueling protests about 40 yards apart, and they implemented an exit plan for the free speech rally attendees. We got the First Amendment people in, and we got them out, Commissioner Evans said. The counter-protest also included some members of Antifa, shorthand for anti-fascists, a mix of far-left-leaning militant groups that resist neo-Nazis and white supremacists at demonstrations and other events, often donning all-black outfits. There was noticeable police presence walking in tow with the protesters and at the park. Officials said earlier that 500 police officers, including some undercover and with cameras, would be on patrol. Now, counter-protesters Jeff and Amelia, a couple from Somerville, Massachusetts, who did not give their last names, were seen wearing yellow Star of David, also known as Jewish badges. Now, Jewish people were forced to wear the badge by German Nazis, which also was used as a symbol to humiliate and to segregate the Jewish people. This is what our ancestors had to wear, Amelia said. We're saying, no, we're not going to let that happen again. I never in a million years thought that I'd be walking up to protest Nazis, but I'm here and I'm doing it. Jeff said the couple wanted to reimagine the offensive symbol after the events in Charlottesville. John Medler, one of the organizers of the free speech rally, previously told multiple media organizations the rally is not intended for white supremacists, neo-Nazis, or members of the Ku Klux Klan. He also said the rally is not for those who attended the violence in Charlottesville. The Boston Free Speech Coalition said on its Facebook page that the group is strictly about free speech. We denounce the politics of supremacy and violence. Other rallies organized by various political factions have been planned Saturday in New York, Los Angeles, and Venice, California, Dallas, and Hot Springs, Arkansas. The Boston rally has been planned since late July, but gained immense interest and unrest in Charlottesville, Virginia on August 12th, which left 19 people injured and one young lady dead. The Virginia college town devolved into complete chaos when counter-protesters violently clashed with white supremacists who were protesting the proposed removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. The violence escalated when a car plowed into counter-protesters, killing a 32-year-old woman and injuring 19 others, authorities and witnesses said. Now, President Trump, according to the media outlet, defended the torch-wielding white nationalists, saying it was unfair to suggest the marchers were neo-Nazis or white supremacists. He also blamed both sides for the violence. The president's remarks drew swift bipartisan rebuke. You know, and again, it goes back to how you interpret the president's remarks, really. The president is well known to taking to Twitter and making a remark off the top of his head, spelling sometimes being a side issue or looked at after the fact. Ahead of the planned Dallas protest, Mayor Mike Rawlings said in a statement on Facebook that a statue of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, was vandalized. City staff acted quickly to clean it, and Dallas police will be monitoring the park going ahead. We will not tolerate unlawful behavior, including acts of vandalism or violence, regardless of one's beliefs. He added that the Dallas Police Department has an operational plan for the rally Saturday night at City Hall. He called on demonstrators to be peaceful and civil. In Hot Springs, Arkansas, dozens of members of the Highwaymen, a group of pro-Confederate men who hold demonstrations, gathered in support of preserving Confederate symbols. Organizer James Del Brock said his group is not linked with the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, and his members are advocating saving our heritage and Constitution. Constitutional rights. We were in Charlottesville. We had nothing to do with the Unite the Right rally. We were there to support the monument and to support the freedom of speech of both sides. He said the rally, which also drew opposition, was held in downtown Hot Springs near the Confederate Memorial Park, where a statue of a Confederate soldier was dedicated in 1934. It was also the site of two alleged lynchings, according to the Arkansas Times. Taking the statues down isn't going to change the hate in someone's heart. It's not going to change the way they think about anything, he added, referring to the nationwide efforts to remove Confederate statues. The pro-Confederate members were briefly accosted by counter-protesters before the demonstrations disbanded. Two people were arrested in Hot Springs after blocking the permitted march to the Confederate monument. Local clergymen also attended the rally, opposing the racism they said has been openly expressed since last week's unrest in Charlottesville, Virginia. My perspective is, what is the purpose of trying to conserve a statue? Asked Gregory Nuttles, pastor of Visitors Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church. What does brick and mortar do when there's no change in the heart? You know, so we have, you know, the waves going on in the pond here, folks. This is, you know, this is the after effect of what had been going on in Charlottesville, Virginia last week. Now, thankfully, we really haven't seen a large outbreak of you know, violence, but it's just been crazy. Now, we may think that we are dwelling a bit much on what has happened with these protests and counter-protests and people not wanting to have the Confederate statues and things removed. We at least have not been suffering from what has happened in Spain, and I would be remiss if I didn't use the last few minutes of Voice of the People radio here this afternoon to talk about the after effects of what's happened. There's been marching in Barcelona, in case you missed it somehow. But in Barcelona, Spain, thousands of Spaniards set out on a pilgrimage of peace on Friday along the same street that was the scene of horror less than 24 hours before. Under the hot Mediterranean sun, they clapped and paused at makeshift memorials to the dead along La Rambla, the boulevard that is ancient Barcelona's beating heart. "It makes me feel proud of my city," said Xavi Fuentes, a veterinarian who came to La Rambla with his partner, Abel Perez, to get here and see all this makes you so proud that this is what you must do. 13 people, including an American, were killed when a van rammed into the crowds along La Rambla. More than 100 others were injured in the carnage. The victims, most of whom were from Spain, represented 34 different nationalities. The horror continued through the night when a separate vehicle attack took place in Cambrils, a city less than 100 miles away on the coast. One person died there. Police said Friday that three attackers, one of whom was identified as Musa U. Kabir, were killed by law enforcement. A fourth suspect is still being sought. Yet, in Barcelona, a day after the violence, the marchers who gathered spontaneously were trying to reclaim their city from the terrorists and take a stand against an ideology that is so at odds with the population, said Perez, a banker. "We want to give a message of firmness and strength to those who want to annihilate our way of life." As the pair spoke, a major anti-terrorism operation was underway with security forces hunting the driver of the van, who was seen escaping on foot Thursday. In another incident, 8 hours later, a woman was killed when a car ran down six people and a police officer in Cambrils, a town south of the city. According to the authorities, the incidents have killed and wounded people from 34 nations, a sign of Barcelona's standing both as an international city and as a tourism mecca. The city and the country formally honored the dead with a minute's silence at noon at 6 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, lining up to enter the Plaza de Catalunya, a large square at the top of La Rambla, the boulevard. Spain's King Felipe VI and Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy, along with Catalan Regional President Carles Puigdemont, stood in front of the crowd after it had passed. They broke out into chants of, "I am not afraid. I am not afraid." Rajoy tweeted a message of unity after the minute of silence. "The king and all the institutions of Spain are unified in condemning the barbarity. We will defeat terrorism." Afterward, on La Rambla, Guillermo Isern said he wanted to send the same message the residents of other multicultural European cities have tried to deliver after similar attacks. He said, "We have to move ourselves to show that there isn't fear," the 23-year-old physics and education student and part-time waiter said. "Clapping gives us hope." He said he was afraid but wouldn't stop taking the subway, going out on the street. "The first few days, I guess you're afraid to go into crowds and then you forget, but living with fear is a bad thing." He warned against what he said was the inevitable wave of bigotry to follow. "Racism is worse than anything," Isern added. "I work with Pakistanis, all people from the Maghreb. They are the most peaceful people you will meet." He has reason to worry because far-right demonstrators planned an event at 7 p.m. in front of the famous Boqueria food market on La Rambla. The event, billed as an effort to defend Spain and Europe from cultures that are totally alien to it, according to a statement by organizers, quickly degenerated after a much larger group of chanting anti-fascist protesters surrounded a few dozen right-wing demonstrators. So scuffles broke out, police in riot gear stepped in to separate the group. So what we see here, folks, you know, to be quite fair, is we're seeing the same type of protesting, and we're seeing the same type of anti-protesters in universally across at least the Western world at this point. We're seeing response by the civil authorities and by the police to try to maintain public order. And so what you've seen reflected in Boston is what happened in the streets of Barcelona maybe for different reasons. It may be to protest the organizers who claim that they had nothing to do with the racially tinged violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. But, you know, it's something that we keep our eye on, because that's what is going on out there. You know, a woman held a sign in Spanish that reads in English, "I sing today for those voices that you have dared to silence. We are not afraid." And with that being said, thank you for listening to Voice of the People Radio here on United Public Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Miller. I wanted to remind you that without you, the listening audience, there is no Voice of the People Radio. Please try to connect with us on Tuesday as we air from 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, we're here every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time with Voice of the People Radio. And coming up next, you'll hear the dulcet tones of the Angry Angley, Michael Angley, coming up next on the United Public Radio Network. It has been a pleasure being with you again this afternoon. Thank you for listening, and wherever you are in the world, have a great night, everybody.
Has your slow Wi-Fi worn out its welcome? Switch to Cable One high-speed internet now with Wi-Fi One. Get up to 100 megs, just $35 a month. Call 855-CABLE-1 and welcome the best Wi-Fi into your home. Wi-Fi One gives you whole home Wi-Fi coverage, guaranteed. Call 855-CABLE-1. Cable One, the face of fast.
$35 a month for the first 3 months. Modem lease required with Wi-Fi One. In-home coverage only. Restrictions apply. Call Cable One for details.